Hey, honey, want to try something different this weekend?
Ooh, what do you have in mind?
Have you ever role-played before?
You mean like whips and all that other scary stuff?
Oh, no. I'm talking about rolling some dice and playing some Dungeons & Dragons. Or even trying something like a cool new board game or a collectible card game like Magic the Gathering.
Oh, that sounds way better than the other thing.
NobleKnight.com is your one-stop shop for all things role-playing, board, wargaming, and collectible card games. Noble Knight Games is committed to providing you with the best possible selection of new and used products with a selection of over 100,000. Everything on the site is in stock and ready to ship to you worldwide. Discounts are available, and you can expect reasonable prices for rare items. You can even sell or trade your stuff to them. NobleKnight.com, where out of print is available again.
So I can be the elf this time, right?
Oh, honey.
Throughout the ages, there have been heroes and warriors who have embarked on quests to save faraway lands and free the people from would-be conquerors. With dice and not a lot of common sense in various role-playing games. Today, our legends come from the halls of This Week in Geek. An unlikely group of nerdy adventurers armed with some pretty stupid ideas and a horseshoe up their butts come together to save the day in These Warriors Are Terrible. Seriously, these are the guys we're going to go with?
Hey guys, welcome out to These Warriors Are Terrible debrief, brought to you by the good folks over at NobleKnight.com, where out of print is available again. And of course, our good friends who helped me dress today over at offworlddesigns.com. Use promo code BROHOOF to get 10% off your entire order. That is good for international and domestic orders, so check them out. They are most definitely beyond awesome. Now, I do have to post a small correction to this episode. Our former Twig intern, AJ Bernard's father, like I did mention throughout this entire session, passed away on May 9th or 10th. And I've been saying his name wrong. It was Denis Bernard, because he comes from a very heavy French background, and they're quite prominent in Welland, Ontario, and actually helped develop the French immersion program for this particular province. So that's kind of neat. A little bit of trivia there. May you rest in peace, Denis. You were a very awesome man. So, now let's get back to the matter at hand. We are talking about Pathfinder Nightmare Late, the module that I created and ran for these group. And let's just say it went off the rails not too long after we started.
It went off the rails the second we got on that boat.
Pretty much. And I, so I guess everybody go around the group and introduce yourselves again.
Okay, I'll start. I'm Big Mike. I played Brock von Hellsmasher, a dwarven bard. Yeah, hello.
Hi.
Go ahead, Tom.
I was just saying hi to Mike.
Oh, hello.
Okay, I'll go ahead then. I'm Tom, he's an evil genius white, and I played Arkari, a.k.a. Nash, who is the 1/8 hobgoblin knife fighter who suffered the tragic loss of his chicken.
The chicken was precious to my character.
I'm Justin so Mysterycock. I played the cleric Soth, responsible for the death of said chicken. It was really, honestly, I was trying to kill the assassin.
I didn't blame you. I blamed the assassin. It was his fault.
I blamed my god.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we still have another person.
Oh. Oh, and well, because I'm used to you guys pointing at me whenever you want me to talk.
I'm metaphorically pointing at you, Connell.
I'm pointing so hard right now, you don't even know.
Okay, well, my name is Connell Macbeth, a.k.a. Dr. Holocaust, and I was playing a human rogue who was practically friggin' Batman. and I can't remember the name that I used. Wargarbles? Sven Wargarbles.
So he's multi-syllables with you, isn't it?
It has to be.
Not Sonterblugget von Humpenshire this time.
Yes, Sonterblugget was the name of my horse.
Is that the name? Because you've always said it so fast that I could never quite process it. I just know it was the most hilarious combination of syllables I'd heard in a while.
It's weird seeing it typed up on YouTube, because I'm just looking at the letters, I'm like, holy crap, that does make that sound.
It's just.
I figured out as much as Sonterblugget.
Okay, so in today's debrief, there are a number of things that happened during my adventure that I didn't quite count on, namely our number two,
As I call it, the endless fucking dice roll. Oh, boy.
Are you kidding? I didn't do a damn thing.
No, Mike, it was really all your fault when you, as soon as you had a woman walking up the stairs to the second floor of the hotel, like, what did you expect to happen other than everyone to just forget about the game?
See,
no,
I kind of
figured everything was going to go fine. I was going to go on, like, a panty raid, but then everything suddenly went wrong when...
Whose house is on fire?
I apologize. One of my minions is attempting to cook something, and the alarms have gone off.
So they're failing miserably.
Everybody just sit tight. Everything's going to be okay. All right, they
Why did I immediately think that was happening at Dodd's house, though?
Hey, fuck off.
Justin, I thought it was at your place. I figured you were at going through an emergency drill of some kind at the office.
Oh, right, yeah, because I'm always at the office.
That's where you live, Justin.
Yeah, no, I'm not currently in the middle of Fort Eacock. Just say that really quickly. You enjoy yourselves. We all basically went wingman style and started the most epic concert any tavern has ever seen, providing lights and sound and a multi-array of effects of sensory perceptions.
We need to
just
give
so that our rogue could go upstairs and tap that ass.
We need to give a shout out to Derek, though, for not being able to make it today.
Yeah, unfortunately, Derek the Bard is having to slave away for the man today, and he could not join us. So Derek's character was your sorcerer, your utility mage, although he had a fondness for acid every time he could.
Yeah, and he had a shield the whole time.
He was a dragon aspect.
Right.
Yeah.
Sorcerer, which was I thought was neat. Just see this tiny little gnomish dragon just walking around. No, halfling. Yes, he was a halfling. Yes.
Yeah, we don't speak about gnomes.
Blink,
Well, that got quiet quickly.
It's just not about gnomes. They're gross. So, your story went right off the rails, right off at the beginning, Mike. But I mean, what did you actually have? How what was the pacing? How long did you want us there in that? Did you really think we were going to get out of that hotel in the first 20 minutes?
I was fucking hoping. I was hoping you guys would be in and out in 20 minutes. Basically, what was going to happen, the assassin was going to go up the stairs, was going to kill her. You were going to chase him through the sewers of the city. You were supposed to interrogate the assassin. So you were going to fight him, but I was going to make him a lot less buff. But what happened is because you guys engaged him so early, he didn't get a chance to kill the girl, and he kept rolling fucking ones. Thinking, oh shit, now I gotta, this isn't going the way I want. And yeah, so that's what happened. And actually, the character of the ambassador is one I kind of made up on the spot because I didn't have any stats for her actually.
Because she was gonna die.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, you are gonna be DOA. I don't even need to put stats for you. fuck.
See, and there you go. That's a really valuable dungeon mastering lesson. If you put the character on the screen, you better know who they are, even if they're only expected to survive for 10 seconds, because you never know.
I'm kind of ridiculously meticulous that way. I stat everyone.
Yeah, unless like you know empirically that they're going to die, like they are already dying by the time the player has found them, stat them. Because you never know what the players might try to do to save them, especially if they're a woman.
And on the reverse side, I remember running a game where the opening sequence was going to have this massive explosion, but these three characters, I had expected, okay, they're stacked up with stats, I got a huge backstory, the three of them are these paladins who were sent to deal with it, they're going to live through this, except the opening sequence went so drastically wrong, where all the heroes did all the wrong things and made it all that much worse, and these three characters who I had these huge elaborate backstories are going to work as the guides to this entire campaign, were all wiped out. And I had nothing. And I'm like, fuck, what do I do now? How do I now guide my heroes through this story when I've now killed off my guides? So that was fun. It's good. Things that go off the rails can be exciting, though. Although I didn't think we would be stuck in the same battle for 2.5 hours. That was interesting.
See, that is one of the biggest disadvantages, I think, of any system that runs on D20 or anything like Dungeons & Dragons, is combat... Somebody summed it up as this. A game where a three-hour walk can take 5 minutes, where a five-second battle can take 3 hours.
Yeah, you've all complained about how fast my combat goes, but fuck it. We get shit done that day, don't we?
Yeah, whereas with mine, it drags out. It's very cinematic,
but
it drags out. And
I was going to say, combat taking a while isn't necessarily a bad thing.
No, not if you can.
It allows everyone to have a little bit more control over their individual actions. Everything's more done with like a scalpel instead of a broadsword, where you really can, you know, Connell's able to bring out all these elaborate items out of his pouch and throw them exactly kind of where he wants them to go, and can worry about speed and movement and angles and trajectory, and all that works into the game. Whereas when we did Star Wars Leviathan on D6, it was more just, you know, scattershot all the time, and it was more about the bigger picture rather than the individual actions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I wanted to squeeze a lot more kind of story into this, and I think I really hit my stride around hour three to try and make it a more enriching experience. Hours one and two, I wasn't too proud of from a GM perspective. I was thinking, oh shit, I got them sucked into combat. I had this epic moody thing I wanted to set up.
I was really invested though.
Yeah, we were having a blast. We had Batman throwing caltrops on the ground. We had fireballs turning me into a skeleton and killing me. I threw out my sword out the window. I mean, that opening sequence where Sven kicks in the door, shoots out the dagger, grabs the girl and jumps out the window and floats down to safety was just fucking incredible. That was one of the greatest moments I've ever seen in a game with a rogue. And it's exactly what you're rogue to be.
I can't believe it was my first time playing as a rogue. Where have they been all my life?
I love being born a rogue for that.
Oh fuck. It was just like, it's all skill checks and shenanigans. Like, yeah. Like absolutely, it's all indirect combat, skill checks and shenanigans, and I feel like I was born for this.
And that's the key. You figured it out. It's all about staying out of combat. After you fired off that crossbow, did you actually use your weapon for the rest of that entire battle?
No.
Oh, he dropped it.
I dropped it in order to grab the princess and leap out the window. Or rather, the court mage. She was a princess to me. I don't give a shit.
Sure. And then the rest of the entire combat was just shenanigans and items that you were pulling out of your belt.
Yeah, no, I literally ran up to that guy and was like throwing nets at him and caltrops and other shit, just like, because I didn't have my crossbow and I didn't have any other weapons on me, so I was literally just flinging crap.
Yeah, no, this adventure brought to you by Thunderstones.
The best invention.
Oh yeah, flashbangs. These thunderstones did nothing good for us.
They blinded Derek and made him deaf twice. I couldn't believe that happened. Just
I see the second time around. It's like, would you stop that? What?
I don't understand sign language.
Another thing that happened during the second hour, and this has been a problem with Twat since the inception of the show. How do we deal with player death? And one of the things I gave you guys, and I totally didn't expect you to use it, because I literally just went through the back of the Game Mastery Guide for about 3/4 of the items that like you guys had, and just gave them to you. And I figured, it casts heal. They won't have Cure Light Wounds at this stage, and none of them's a paladin or a cleric, truly. Except for you, and I don't think you had any healing spells, did you?
I had one. I used them.
Yeah. So I figure, you know what? At least this way, they have a backup plan. They'll never get to use resurrection. Second hour happens.
Yeah.
So
yeah, yeah. The one guy who can actually heal things was vaporized.
So we're like, how do we deal with this? I mean, like, we've had games where things should have happened and they didn't. I mean, one good example of this, once again, me GMing, is actually there are two examples of this that I can think of. One was when we were all playing Shadowrun, Steve Saylor was playing a mage, and he suffers from something called Drain. Every time he casts a spell, it has the potential to hurt you physically. Steve had casted his spell at the highest possible force and rolled a shit ton of ones. This is very bad. Steve should have died in hour, I think it was two, in that adventure. But I didn't know how to handle that. So I'm like, oh, fuck, I better make up something. Good thing he's magical. The gods save you, yay. The next problem we had, I think, was with Erica Sasbo when we were playing Star Wars Leviathan.
She had an alien head burst in her face. She was literally a number away from having that going catastrophically wrong.
Yeah.
Man, I only listened to the first part. I gotta hear the rest of that now.
You idiot. You gotta listen to the whole thing right to the very... I gotta say that it's the last 10 minutes of the last episode and Julian and what he does. It's just... I won't say anymore. It's just... It's worth it to get right to the end and really invest yourself.
Almost spoilers.
You just know who
and when Steve did our Matrix game, it was a scene with a car. And was it Erica again? I think it was Erica again. And trying to throw the car through the lobby and rolled like 3 ones in a row. And D6 system, it was a serious complication was going to happen here. And the serious complication was that she still succeeded in driving the car through the lobby and she was just thrown from the car. I was like, that's not... So it worked! Steve, you're being a little too nice here. She should have put it in reverse and driven it into the wrong lobby or something. But, you know, it's tough as a GM to make that judgment call of...
No jokes about women drivers,
of course. How do I still remain fair and harm my players without just wiping them out of the story, especially in a 4-hour format where you remove a personality from your podcast for the remaining 2 hours?
Yeah. Honestly, like when we were doing the Judge Dredd D20, I flubbed a roll while I was climbing a ladder and and Big Mike told me that my foot got caught in the ladder and like twisted or broke.
Yeah.
And he was asking later, it's like maybe I should have just killed you. And I was like, probably should have. That would have made things pretty interesting right there in the last episode.
Well, here's my thing. You didn't fail. I was looking at the situation like, should I have killed him? I don't know. But the thing is, you failed operating the ladder, so therefore whatever bad happens to you on the ladder. Hence why the twisting of the ankle. I'm like, well, I could kill him, or I could wing him and make him walk around like a cripple. What's scarier? That is.
Right.
Yes, let's do that.
I was ready, though, because my character died very close to the end of that hour, to just spend the break between hours 2 and 3 to make up a new character. Or take my same character sheet and just be like, is there a doctor in the house? And someone in the audience in the tavern is like, I'm a cleric. And, you know, he just joins your party.
I think that would have been an interesting kind of twist on it. Actually, what I probably would have done in that situation... is I would have had your character somehow haunt the group. I would have told you this in secret.
Yes.
Like, you're allowed to harass them, fuck up one roll per hour for somebody.
He's on our side.
Yeah, but you guys also let him die.
He let him die.
Character deaths in role-playing games can be really powerful if it can help move the story forward. I played a Dungeons & Dragons 3.5 game for 5 years, all through high school and college, and my monk, who I had invested, like, you know, 4 hours every month into this character, and we'd worked our way from, like, levels 1 up to 7 or 8 or something, and in one roll, the rule of thumb in Dungeons & Dragons is if you roll a 20, that's a critical hit. If you roll another 20, that's like a really awesome critical hit. This is going to deal massive damage. And then if you roll a third confirmed 20, a natural 20 in a row, that's just – you're dead. You kill the person. No matter – no questions asked. They're dead. Gone. It doesn't matter how impossible or improbable it might be. They're gone.
Yeah.
And that's what happened. It was even better. The Dungeon Master wasn't even rolling the monster dice. We had brought in a friend who had never played to play the role of the boss monster, and he rolled 3 20s. So the DM was like, fuck, I don't even want to like take this away from him. This is incredible. So he let my monk, who I had been playing for 6.5 years, to just liquefy right in front of us from like a sonic blast. All the bone disappeared, and I just... dropped like a sack of potatoes, and that was it, and he was gone, and it shattered the whole group because it really sent this like feeling like, oh shit, this is the battle to end all battles. Our group of 6 is now a group of 5, and it was a lot of fun actually to go through that experience and create a secondary character where we went on a side quest to try and resurrect him. And it really brought the story forward where we all started – it meant something when a character died. And you can't just shy away from it, but it's it can be a really interesting storytelling device if you know how to use it right. You're not just being a dick bag and just killing right and center. That's not fun at all if your characters are disposable.
Yeah, and the only other game where we've had consistent character death is the game you're running next month, Justin, is Paranoia XP. And we're not going to tell you too much more than that, but death is sort of the name of the game in that one.
Yeah, it's a little bit more slapstick. It's less about is my character going to die and more about am I at least still going to look good in the papers at the end of the day.
Yeah.
And, so you're everyone in Alpha Complex has multiple clones and you die in these hilariously unpredictable ways and then a pneumatic tube comes down from the ceiling and there you are. And a new clone walks out with another number stamped on their forehead.
It can be really difficult for players to change from like the usual mindset in terms of tabletop gaming to that mindset in specific.
Well, it's really frustrating if you...
Well, yeah. I had another group of people that I normally did tabletop games with, and their reaction was, like, they got upset when their characters just started dying en masse, and they were like, well, no, guys, that's the point of this game. Your characters are supposed to die a bunch, and it's supposed to be funny and slapstick and hilarious and stuff, and they're like, yeah, but my character died. And yeah, that was kind of feeling, because they hadn't really gotten into that mindset where this isn't your standard tabletop game, and that dying is supposed to be just a regular part of it.
Yeah. Well, spoiler free, I remember there was a point in our game, Mike, where you and Erica, she keeps coming up in the conversation, it clicked. Oh, death doesn't have as much meaning as we think it does. And you just started actually having fun and giving into it and just being completely chaotic for the whole group and being as much a danger to yourself as you were to everyone around you. And at the same time, I remember really fighting with Steve for a bit where he was getting really frustrated and discouraged when characters were being wiped out because he couldn't give himself into the darker side of the comedy of the game. And it was just sort of like he felt like he was failing. I'm like, no, you didn't fail. You just don't have a say in it.
Well,
and how some things in the game go.
And that's something to actually kind of address here, because as far as I'm concerned, Steve is relatively new to the world of RPGs series, because we're playing consistently, right? So your game, he's basically welcome to spring fucking training, more or less, for him. And I've noticed with him, he comes from a different type of player class. And Big Mike actually posted a blog on thisweekingeek.net about this, which you should go check out. It's, what's it called, Mike, again?
The Sage Abyss?
Yeah, and what is the title of your article called again?
I don't remember.
Five phases of the RPG player?
Yeah, something like that.
Go check that out. And I find Steve is in the number 2 to 3 phase. And what I'm trying to say is, you get attached to a character.
The phases of the RPG player.
Yeah.
The phase of the RPG player.
Because, like Justin just said, sometimes it comes down to, are you failing? We saw this during the Avengers module, where Steve was nicknamed Captain Ineffectual. And then we had problems.
He was Craster in Star Wars.
Yeah.
You get a character who's just going to not perform as you want him to. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
It comes down to dice rolls, and you're just going to roll a bunch of ones.
Yeah, and it sucks because I don't like having my players not having fun and feeling discouraged, but it's sometimes the attitude of the player. And I'm not saying Steve has a bad attitude about it. He just hasn't had the experience with it yet.
What it is and this is nothing to say, Steve. It goes down to he's figuring it out. And I think he figured it out a long way when he ran a Matrix game and learned how little control even the GM has over the direction of the story. We're all working together to tell the story, which means no one person can decide its outcome. And he was having a lot of trouble with his character. And I think he's gotten over that now since actually running a game of, I want my character to do this. My character doesn't do this. I've done something wrong. And that's not always the case. You want your character to do something, but sometimes you really have to just enjoy and revel and roll around in its failure. If your character is going to become a bumbling idiot and a klutz and trip over everything and crash his vehicle into the ground every time he steps onto it, that's not your fault as a player. You're rolling ones. It's going to happen. Work that into your story. Make it fun. And that's a really hard, a difficult lesson to learn, because
it can be very hard, yeah.
Especially for Steve, who's a writer, I'm just saying, for Steve himself, he writes books, he puts out stories. I've always thought of him as a storyteller. He has so much control over every aspect of his story, even though he'll let his characters do what they want to do, and you know all that. It's very different in a role playing game where you have very little control over the outcome of the story. All you can do is control how you react to those outcomes.
Yeah,
and it's an interesting, it's hard lesson to learn.
It's just a different type of writing, honestly. Like, I find that my writing can really shine when I do an RPG, as long as you're just willing to be flexible about it. Like, you say, I want these plot elements, and I want them to lead in this direction, but you don't say, it needs to go here. You have to kind of leave things open, let the players take it the direction they want.
A character who's designed to die in the first minute.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't even call it writing, though, at that point. There's something I've been noticing the more I've been looking into RPGs. There are the oddest mix between designing a video game and crafting a story.
Yeah.
And you have to strike that hybrid between the two, because the second you realize something, you have 4 to 5 elements that you have no control over, mm-hmm. and you have to learn how to influence that without actually directly influencing in that, and that's your players.
It's kind of like a group writing exercise, honestly.
It totally is. And honestly, I came into it not as a writer. I always came into role-playing games originally from an improv team. We were an improv team in high school. A teacher told us, hey, Dungeons & Dragons is kind of like improv. Why don't you come and try it out over a lunch break? And so I think it was much more of a natural fit than someone who's used to crafting stories on paper without the rules of a game around it, to someone who is used to playing on stage in front of people and making things up on the spot, set to different game rules, like the party quirks from Whose Line Is It Anyway or something like that. That's how I came into Dungeons & Dragons, was from an improv side. And it's a mix between group storytelling and improv. It really you just got to go with it and just let yourself be caught up in the current and accept the things you can't control, which is very hard to do. But once you do, it's so fucking rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, in terms of storytelling, I came into role-playing as a player. I didn't start GMing until I was in high school, and I hated it. Utterly hated it, because I never got a chance to be a player. And even now, I'm not a player very often. I'm more game... I think I've game-mastered... How many games have we done total? I've done Pathfinder, Star Wars, Shadowrun... Okay, so, all right, I've had 3 turns. Okay, so that's not entirely fair to say. I find now the opposite is true. I like being a GM more than I like being a player, which is weird, because I often consider...
It's addictive.
It really is, because I don't consider myself a very creative person in this regard, but I find the fact I can keep on my feet and keep you guys guessing, and it seems completely natural.
Actually, well, really, Mike, I was surprised at how well you kept that story interesting. Like, you're a natural at, like, creating these tense situations and making things seem very real. I was actually very surprised and impressed.
I love your red herring approach to storytelling, Mike, both in Pathfinder and in Star Wars that I've played with you directly. You started off with one way where we're landing in a boat, and we got this weird, and it was kind of the first half of the adventure was much more light and comedy. I think that was more our fault. But even in Star Wars, it was sort of the same way, big epic battles, we're fighting with the rebellion, we got to go do this, and there's these slaves, and we're going through the base and shooting away, and then it takes a sharp turn into the depths of darkness, and that last like episode and a half is just complete dripping terror, and that was true for Pathfinder, it was true for Star Wars. I don't know how you do it, but the way you're able to grab the tone of the story and then wring it out like a towel and just have nothing left but dread left in that towel, it was incredible.
I think
last episode we were all feeling the cold sweats in that last episode. Once we got the nightmares, I think, we were walking through the forest, and we were getting whispers being sent to us of, you're going to kill your friends, and you're going to like it. You know, that kind of shit. That was so
creepy.
you're gonna worship me as a god by the end of the year. That kind of stuff. Like, oh my god, it puts the hairs in the back of my head.
See, that all that I completely made up on the spot.
It's always the improv stuff is always the best, in my opinion. Like, depending on who you have running the game, it can be like the stuff that you do on the fly ends up being some of the best stuff.
Well, because by that point, too, for you, Mike, by the fourth episode, you've gotten to know our characters in a way you couldn't have known when you were writing the adventure. So you're being flexible, and you're making a story that is tailored for us. And that's a gift for a player to get, a GM like that, who's willing to really read their players and fuck with their minds like that. That's so much fun.
Because I really want to give you guys the experience of something you've probably never had before. And I like how Tom gives me the feedback where it gives you that mortal terror for just a minute. And there is a line out of the GURPS Cthulhu Punk source book where they talk about the three kinds of horror. There's gross out, there's, I think there's like terror, and then there's like utter fright or something like that. I can't remember how it goes.
Terror is something that jumps at you. Yeah. Horror is the feeling of dread as you're looking down that hallway and you don't know what's at the end of the road.
I'm a big fan of that type of horror. Like I like movies like The Ring more than I like movies like Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
Yeah, yes. And it's so hard to find that type of horror these days because everybody relies upon that. And that's why I really want to do a horror game, but me and Justin were going to do two separate Call of Cthulhu sessions this year. But I figure, honestly, let him have that. I'll try something else.
To be fair, you were planning to do a very different game. Like, it was going to be the same rule set, which we've already done games with the same rule set with Matrix and Star Wars. You were planning to do, I think, a very high supernatural game with a lot of supernatural elements, and it was going to be very more actually drawn into other worlds, whereas my idea was to be much more you'd never see the supernatural. It would be more like the Penumbra or Amnesia video games where you feel it, but it's always under the surface. You never get to directly witness the evil.
Yeah, and with this particular Pathfinder game, I didn't expect to go down this path, because when I threw you guys the nightmares, the thing that really kind of spurred this on was the response I got from Tom and the response I got from Mike. Because when we went into the forest afterwards and I said, everybody, you like your entire family's dead, Mike, you had a look on your face.
Yep.
Like, I'd physically hurt you. And I'm thinking, all right, I got him.
No, that happens a couple of times. It didn't really get to unleash it, but that's the point where, with me, when I play RPGs, where it's like, okay, it's time to stop playing. Now it's time to win.
Yeah, and that spurred me on something fierce.
And I think you got scared a little bit because you started panicking that I was going to rules lawyer. I'm like, no, I'm not rules lawyering you. I'm hanging you exactly by the rope you frigging give me, buddy. Because my plan was, whatever this thing was, I'm like, okay, let's figure out how to kill it.
Yeah, you're going into survival mode now because he's made it clear he's going to torture you unless you do.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Birdman, you made a really big mistake when you assumed that Big Mike feels things like fear or sadness.
Yeah.
Causing pain and destruction.
He's like, yes, I've got him on the ropes now. You fool! You wandered right into his trap.
But the difference in tone between the tavern and the forest, that was just incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I'm really proud of the way that went, and although I will say this, the only part of this I did not expect is the final battle.
Yeah, how quick we killed him?
How quick you got through it, for one.
Oh, I thought you were doing that on purpose.
Oh, no, the idea
that's
was...
That's when we actually started rolling good.
Yeah, that's when we started working together.
Yeah, no, that too.
That's what did it, because when you guys were doing the assassination thing, there wasn't a lot of coordination. There was, this sounds good, this sounds good. No,
it was Benny Hill.
By the time we had gotten through the gelatinous cube trap, which was hilarious, we were all down that hallway and we were very quickly like, this, no, this, no, this, 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 doom, done. And we had a plan.
Flatness Cube worked as a really great, like, it was a MacGuffin, but it was also a good training mode for us, like a tutorial of how to work together as a team.
I just love how everybody's panicking and screaming, and then Derek just starts dumping food on the ground.
And I'm like, oh, what are you going to do? And then just click, da-da-da-da-da, back down, and nothing happened.
And then we all look stupid, and Derek's lunch is all over the floor. Like, it's just... Fuck! Fuck, it's like I'm dead! It was the best. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
The moment when that one went south for me, because, all right, on my Game Master notes, I specifically said, if players succeed, A happens. If players don't succeed, B happens. And you met a happy medium in the middle. You guys succeeded. You rescued the people you were supposed to. You killed who you were supposed to. You got the hell out of Dodge. And then the Thunderstone happened. And
Thunderstone.
Like, Derek,
you know what? People should listen to the debriefs before they listen to the episodes, because it's really going to get them interested listening to the full 4 hours.
Like, what happened with Derek is when he threw the Thunderstone back, he rolled really good. And then the Pit Fiend rolled really good. Like, basically, I was going to turn Derek into a walking tank and wipe you guys out. Thinking, all right, he did stupid. You're all going to pay for it now.
Right.
But then Derek, he rolled a 20. I can't argue with that. There's no way in hell I can argue with that. So I'm like, all right, you break the hold. You didn't do dumb again. You ran. Thank you. And
but you know what?
I'm sorry, Justin, go ahead.
I was going to say, though, you then took that sort of failure to connect in what you had planned out and turned it into what I think is the reason I want to return to these characters and return to this world. We're all in this boat. We have, quote, one, except you made it clear that
one question mark.
Right? But all of us has this individual curse that's been dropped onto us. Derek will kill our group. I will forsake, you know, my deity. Each one of us has been told a prophecy that will come true in some way. And, I mean, hell, even if it never comes true, it's going to be one of those things that is going to keep
gonna
you up at
night.
It's
going to hang over our heads.
Right, oh like God. The when it's Damocles just, sword.
When I got the whole, like, you know, you're going to betray the rest of the party thing, I was just sitting there going like, well, I could just do it now and get it over with in a really small and insignificant way. So it's not wrong, but I'm just like, all right, so right this on my to-do list. I'm just going to
honestly, Mike, when you tell the rogue,
that just gets it out of the way.
Like, when you tell the rogue in the party that he's going to betray the party and he's going to like it, he's like, yeah, of course I will. It's
like I'm going
to take a dump in everyone's shoes, and that's how.
I expected you to, like, betrayal. Talk about this first thing. Like, no, I'm taking the woman. You betrayed me. Oh.
See, I had him, like,
look at that.
What I've got in mind for your guys in next adventure
that gypsy
is
was right.
I'm going to up the ante, so to speak, for kind of next time, now that you've been named heroes of the land. The king is incapacitated. The queen now rules. I do have ideas to expand this story. And one of the things that we never do on TWAT that we really should, if we really like the game that's gone on, is take a weekend where we're all free and play and not record it. Mm-hmm. But then again, I wonder if we do a disservice by doing that, because now we're invested.
Like, maybe we would.
Well, this was the biggest mistake that I made when I did Paranoia, was that we didn't play before we recorded. I know that if I had sit everyone down and actually played through the game from beginning to end at my apartment, everyone would have felt so much more at ease that for the listener at home, it would have been much more, I think, easier to figure out how the game was working, because everyone would have been working to the rules of the game instead of kind of figuring it out. I'm not against that at all. I would love to play games off the record and then keep sort of the continuity of that going, though, from what we've done on the air.
I think for, like, game systems that we might not be as familiar with, it might be good to have sort of a practice session before we actually play for serious.
I mean, I think games like Call of Cthulhu, for example, might almost require that, but if you do that, you lose the suspense.
Yeah.
Because there's certain... Certain
not the exact same story and whatnot, just sort of have a practice session with the same characters, but
not even the same characters. Just have it like, guys, this is a burn away session. You might all die. And at the end, everyone ends up dead.
Yeah, and like one of the rules,
and that's prequel information that's kind of referred to.
Like, one of the things I'm really looking forward to when Justin runs Call of Cthulhu, and I hope I get picked as a player for this one, is the fact
that...
You're
welcome to audition.
Yeah, and that's what I want to do. Because Call of Cthulhu is very... The idea of H.P. Lovecraft and the Cthulhu mythos is you are not meant to win. You are insignificant. Even a small victory is huge on a cosmic scale because you delayed... what is in essentially the inevitable, but for humanity to see one more day on this planet or this plane, that's a huge deal. And death in that game will come if you are stupid. I mean, I think Spoonie said it best. He was talking about Call of Cthulhu in one of his vlogs or Counter Monkey things, and he's talking to his GM and says, he's like, look, is my 45 Magnum really going to do anything? He's like, no, it's a nightlight. It'll make you feel better. And that's the thing. With all these games, we rely on heavy items or abilities to get our way out. We haven't had a real session where it's been, okay, I have to think my way out of this. I can't bust through the door as it were.
My old D&D group played through Call of Cthulhu, and they told me two things from the story that really kind of like, oh, I want to try this. The very beginning, they all wake up in a field, and they're all stripped down naked, and they have like these runes all like marked all over their body in paint, and they have no memory of how they got there. They have no memory of the previous night, and one of them has blood on his hands, and they immediately had to roll insanity checks. Like at the very first second of the game.
Wow.
And because if you yourself in real life were to wake up in the middle of a field out in Milton and be stripped down naked and covered in satanic runes, you'd freak out too. And that was the idea that he was going with. And one character almost got to the point where he was going to have to kill the person right next to him. From the trauma. And then later on, they're being chased by the police. And another thing with Call of Cthulhu is the laws are much more real and it is more rooted in reality. They're being chased by police. The guy has a pistol in his pocket, but he's never fired a gun in his life. And he pulls the gun around and he shoots wildly into the crowd of police. And he hits one of the officers in the head and kills him instantly. But he was a regular old human, hadn't done anything, wasn't one of the demons or monsters or anything like that. And for the rest of the game, they're now wanted for murder. They're being chased down by the authorities. And he's also dealing with the trauma of having killed a person.
Which, yeah, you see, I want at Call of Cthulhu because I think you guys are starting to get a sense of it now. I am not actually a rules lawyer. I am very much a let's think our way out of this kind of problem player. That's sort of been how I've approached things because my big strategy for this was whatever we've got that's evil. Birdman just told me that I have bracelets of planar teleportation. I'm gonna jump his ass to a lawful good plane.
Yeah, and I never would have thought about that.
That's how I would have thought. And you corrected me on it. It's like, no, you can't jump planes. I'm like, okay, doesn't work. Otherwise, I would have grabbed the pit fiend or tried to trick him into an arm wrestling competition and been like, let's go.
Now, he still would have been able to resist that just due to, unless you rolled 20s, you would have been fucked.
Yeah.
But still, yeah, the fact that you thought about that's great. I mean, I have not met a game yet that I've had to not rely on weapons. And that's my great goal. Like, I'm playing in a separate Pathfinder group right now with guys who will hopefully be doing a show with us. Remarkable. By the time this airs, there may be one or two episodes already out with my friend who owns a comic book store in Orangeville called The Gauntlet. My character is a woman named Thera. You can see where I got the name from. And she's a sorcerer. I'm a bookworm. I carry a sword and a bow because I'm an elf. I guess it's expected. But you hit me once and I'm fucking dead. And I've always wanted to find that role-playing experience where I get a chance to really act it out, find a group of people that I'm super comfortable with to actually role-play. With this group, not so much. They call me fucking Hermione. Yeah, fuck you. And it's just... I think with this group, with Twat, I think we can get that here where we can really embrace the characters and embrace the story. If it's a system or a world we know really well, or a world like, say, Call of Cthulhu, where you don't know shit.
Yeah.
You are just supposed to be a guy, a man, a woman, even a child in this world. And I think that's the beauty of this. I think, for example, with this particular Pathfinder game, I'm finding out where I can strike at people's quote-unquote emotional center. Because, like, particularly with Tom, I'm starting to notice little things with you, thinking, all right, I know how to take advantage of this. With Connell, is this the first game I've ever GM'd you, Connell?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm starting to notice little things. I played with you, but now as a player or as a game master, all right, I'm picking
Yeah, you're
up
learning
on
our tells.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, at the end of the day, D&D and role-playing games, when friends who've never played, but I know get together and play poker every week, and they're like, what's it like? I'm like, well, it's kind of like poker, but with improv and dice and paper and rules and imagination, you're not actually betting real money, but it's got the same atmosphere. I mean, we got drinks, we got chips, we're certainly gambling, we're just gambling with lives.
And it's so rewarding. Now, Mike is the hard one to read because he's been doing this probably about as long as I have, but a lot more frequently. You
know, that and like 8 years of improv training, I can basically project whatever the hell I want and you would have no idea what's going on.
Yeah, it's very hard to read you. Like, I can pick up on certain things, but they're not 100% clear. So I'm like, all right, might be able to use that, might not, keep that in mind. And it's, I don't know, I really find... And even with Derek, once again, years of experience, he's a very eccentric, flamboyant personality. I find there's little things that I can pick up on with him, too. But I'm starting to figure out who is my RPG dream team so I can get the story. Like, one of the things I want, and I don't know whether this is going to sound selfish or not, I want that emotional investment rewarded back to me. Because I really want to tell a story that sticks with you beyond you walking away from the table for more than 15 minutes. And I want something memorable to happen. Like, I'm not saying I want to be your summer blockbuster, so to speak. But I want to be that cult classic when someone asks you a question. Oh, yeah, one time I did this.
Yeah.
I don't want to be Star Wars. I want to be Dawn of the Dead, if that makes any sense. Everybody's heard of it, but not everybody's seen it.
You know, though, Dodd, I mean, my character with Craster in Star Wars, Soth not so much because he was just kind of, he died a couple times. Craster in Star Wars, my character that I had with Steve in The Matrix, this group is creating stories that linger with me long after we're done playing. And I want to go back to find out how Julian screwed us over and get our revenge or return to the Matrix and see what happens next in the outcomes of our adventure to Pathfinder and find out what happens to these curses and to our dynamic, because whether we all like it or not, the five of us are bound together by fate and we're not going to be able to escape that. That's intoxicating.
And it's weird, though, because you look at all the games we've done, some of them can be seen as movies, other of them can be seen as episodic television, for example. Mm-hmm. I think Shadowrun was a very good movie, because there's plot threads there for a sequel, but as you said,
or like a really good pilot episode.
Yeah, and the last 10 minutes are, you literally feel the 24 clock clicking down as shit happens. And with Star Wars, it's an experience like, okay, he's betrayed us. This information is now out in the wild. Now what? And I'm really liking the way our show has evolved all the way back from video game Expendables. Because I think it's only once we hit, I think in the last few months, we've really kind of hit our stride, all of us as players. We're bringing in new people all the time with Connell, Derek, and Justin being our newest additions, and we're looking to expand the roster even further. We've got Erica, we've got Cassie, and Julian. We've got such a big stable of players that the experiences and the stories that we're creating now, I'm really excited to see where it's going to go.
What I like is that it's unpredictable. No one knows what will happen. And that's one of the best parts of any good role-playing game is when you have really competent players who are all invested. But when you get too comfortable with a group, I found this when I played D&D, is we would have to, the DM would just retire and become a player, and someone at the table would become the DM, because we had to shake things up a bit to change it, because we were getting a little too complacent and a little too easygoing, and then the DM was getting a little too, I don't want to kill all these characters, we've worked so hard for it. So then a new person would become the DM, and then all bets are off.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I like about Twat, how we're changing DMs every session, pretty much. So I know Tom's starting to plan his for later in the year.
Oh, I'm super excited about it.
Yeah, like, I'm looking forward to seeing what you do, because you have such, I would call you, Tom, you're a very eccentric guy, but I called you a very subdued personality. Mm. I'm really curious to see what you're going to be like as a DM. I'm really curious.
Given what I know of Tom's body of work, I'm actually rather terrified.
I think it could be a lot of fun.
It's going to be sadistic.
And I want to see what Justin can do with a system that more people know,
mm-hmm.
in a different scenario.
And I can say, I can't announce the game yet because we don't know it, but we'll announce it at the end of a future episode. Julian approached us. He's really interested in taking us through a very interesting new rule set, but in a world that everyone here will find very familiar.
I'm definitely
so
intrigued.
That'll be great.
And that's a thing, too. I find with our group, I find we tend to go more towards the action-y, dramatic stuff. I don't know necessarily whether comedy would blend with our group. Now, if we got...
Did you not pay attention to Pendragon?
Yeah. Yeah, but...
Hey, are you not watching Pathfinder for the first 2 hours?
I don't know. Like, yeah, honestly...
Tenacious Dink playing in the tavern while a rogue saved a princess and jumped out a window. That shit was... And the chicken!
Plus, the comedy depends upon the GM, though. I find, to set up the players for the situations.
Actually, I would say it's the opposite. You set up serious situations and put weird eccentric characters. Things are going to get funny without you trying.
Yeah, I guess you're right. Yeah,
Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy is a very serious universe with very serious characters and serious repercussions and ridiculous main characters who do nothing but really goof around, and the whole series hinges on how the characters are funny. The GM, I've always found, their role is to play the straight man, especially in something like Paranoia. Their role is to be, these are the rules, here's the consistency, and they play with a straight face and let the characters go with the comedy. The only reason thing the GM needs to worry about is stopping the comedy and being flexible enough to let the laughs happen.
Okay, yeah, I guess I'm still trying to find that within myself as a GM to let comedy happen. I mean, with Pathfinder, that's probably one of the funnier things we've done. I know there was a lot of unintentional comedy in Shadowrun, especially Mike and his fucking vinegar trick. there were some serious moments there, but there was also... Steve's. Yeah, or Steve's I'm going to fry my own brain.
I'm going to pretend invisible with the guy who has the infrared glasses and can easily see me.
That was kind
of
funny.
I'm going to flip him off.
Yeah, you there, dwarf. Yeah, I can still see you. Oh. That was a good one. I forgot about that one.
There were some great moments where when we slicked up the hallway with ice to let the guy slide through the hallway into the open elevator shaft.
I forgot about that one, too.
Pretty incredible shit.
Right? So, good times.
In this is the thing that I remember learning in improv, and maybe Mike can attest to this. You don't have to worry about being funny in improv. Nope. Just keep going and always say yes. The funny will happen organically.
Things escalate very naturally on their own if you have people who have the mindset to let them escalate.
Yeah.
That's sort of the golden rule. And like, however much, like, I know, Berman, your specialty really is having situations where the tension really ratchets up. For me, my entire goal has been to make something that just sounds damn entertaining, to have us all screaming at each other in insanity. Pendragon was by far my funnest experience. Nothing against your Pathfinder campaign, because I had a lot of fun there, too. But just having this rampant insanity where players are... Don't like they're in it to win, but there's just the interplay between people is also going on.
I found a lot of that really hinged on having Connell, actually.
because you're like, yeah, you know, Von Huppenshire, and can my horse have a mustache? It was all these retarded situations. You're like, all right, fuck it.
Every time I tell people about that game, I get a laugh out of them.
I've gotten a number of emails and things on Twitter like, this is my favorite twat so far. Yeah. It's hilarious. Stuff like that. I mean, I loved it when Connell did his Vita challenge and included that, where he even added the little pictures, like, can I call my horse Derby Hooves? No! Balloon Animal Pope and stuff like that.
No, I think we have a new all-star character creator in the world of Connell. The work you did in this fucking Pathfinder game was just, there were some brilliant moments where I was just like, I didn't even want to play and roll dice because I feel like I was going to just get in your way. I was like, all right, I'm just going to stand here with my shield planted, and I'm going to watch like everyone else. I want to see what happens. I'll let this go.
I can't wait to see what this person does next. Now, my brother used to play exactly like this. Back when we used to play tabletop games together with like a number of different DMs, he played exactly like this, and I was almost like, I just wanted to go to games just to see what the hell he would get up to, because he would just do random weird shit, and it was always really entertaining. So yeah, I'm glad to sort of bring that element to the game then, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice the fact that we'd have such a large pool, and even with Mike's Transformers game, we're getting a different range of players. Like, because originally, well, we still kind of have this. We have the Toronto people and the Prime crew, which is pretty much me and Mike as the main GMs, but we're all interchanging people now. So I'm getting not just this dynamic from here's Erica, Julian, and Cassie, and Justin. We're getting Justin, Connell, Tom, or Mike, Julian. Like, we're starting to see all these interesting dynamics.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm really looking forward. And I just want to thank you, Mike, for introducing me to Pathfinder. And this and the D6 campaign was great because it led – if we hadn't played Star Wars, we never would have played Matrix. That was a genesis for that. This show, being involved in it, has opened me up to a whole new range of play styles I never even knew about. And I've been sitting around wanting to do – it with my own friends and my own time, a return to D&D 3.5 for an open-ended quest to hunt down 10 creatures. I think like Shadow of Colossus style, but I'll let the players decide where the world, the directions that they go. Honestly, Pathfinder is going to be more entertaining for me to use than 3.5, and I'm going to be making the switch. So thank you for that.
Of course. I mean, I really got to thank people like Jenny over at Paizo Publishing for helping me get the review material for Pathfinder to review on the radio late last year, and people like Chris at the Gauntlet in Orangeville showing me just how flexible the system can be. And what you can really do with it. I mean, and Pathfinder's a game I found can be used exceedingly effectively with miniatures, or it can be completely narrative style if that's the way you want to do it. And that's something I think we'll talk about in a future debrief when we encounter a system that may function better as a war game mini as opposed to a narrative style of RPG. I mean, there's stuff like, say, Battletech, D&D 4th edition, and stuff like that where it helps
to see the battle mat or not to battle mat.
Yeah, and it's
amazing. I got my giant roll-up battle mat right next to me.
I mean, it's amazing how much that changes the dynamic of a game. And that's something...
I personally really like using a battle mat just because I like the visual thing that goes along with it. And I know that some people can't stand it, Tom. But
I can't stand it.
Oh, I like it.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, I know that some people can't get it, but I prefer it because it gives a visual cue to the things that are going along. It allows me to strategize better.
And sure, it allows for, that's what I mean, the scalpel versus the broadsword. It allows for you to strategize, it allows for you to be better on the tactical end, but it pulls you out of the immersion. And for me, like, why am I playing these games? I'm playing it to invest myself into this world that the game master has created. And throwing a big map in front, or even my one friend Eric puts together these elaborate 3D buildings using, you know, paper craft and all that, and he puts little tea lights into the windows, and it looks amazing. But at that point now, it's just a board game, and I'm not as invested.
I have to disagree on that particular point, because a bunch of dudes sitting around with papers and rolling dice and stuff like that, adding in a mat with miniatures doesn't kill the game for me.
To each their own, right? It all depends. How do you work in your imagination and work with the other players?
Well, yeah, I personally don't like miniatures because I don't like the fact that you should be forced to buy extras just to enjoy the game. I cut out little pieces of paper and, you know, put them on the thing, but that's neither here nor there.
I mean, it's one of the topics we're going to have to explore when we get into a game where miniatures would really help, and we'll see how people handle that. So, guys, we're pretty much at the end of our hour here on These Words Are Terrible Debrief, Pathfinder Edition. Like I said, big thanks to our friends over at Paizo Publishing for helping us out. We will be reviewing products from them in the future, so be sure to be checking out thesewordsareterrible.com as well as thisweekingeek.net. Also, thanks to our sponsors of offworlddesigns.com. Using promo code BROHOOF gets you 10% off all orders, international and domestic. And of course, this show would not even be remotely possible without noblenight.com, where Out of Print is available again. Go check out their vast selection. In fact, by the time this episode airs, this month is free RPG month, and because this will be airing in June, so go check it out. As of this recording, there's a sale going on. I'm pretty sure it's going on for a while. So go check out some of their bargain bin stuff. You can find source books for like a dollar, or even main books for like less than $5. So go check it out. A lot of cool stuff. Shipping is not that bad, especially if you're in the U.S., but even the Canada, totally worth it, because hunting these things down can be really expensive. So for These Warriors Are Terrible, we have been
Connell Macbeth, a.k.a. Dr. Holocaust.
Tom, he's an evil genius white.
Justin, Mr. Ecock.
Big Mike from the 404s.
And I've been Mike the Birdman Dodd saying, live free or die hard. And I'll see you again next time on ThisWeekInGeek.net.
You have just listened to This Week in Geeks. These warriors are terrible. Did our terrible warriors succeed in saving the day? Did someone do something completely insane and stun the GM into a stupefied silence? And lastly, did someone get punched square in the goodie bags? Also, are there any settings or RPG systems you'd like the terrible warriors to visit? Do you have your own shameful, awesome, or just plain silly RPG adventures? Tell us with a comment on this episode post or email us at feedback@thisweekingeek.net. Until next time, geeks and gamers, the dice has been put away, the books back on the shelf, and the Cheetos stuck to the floor. For these warriors are terrible!